So as you're taxiing along, you're building up whatever you're building. And, you know, by the time you get to the runway, before you get the takeoff clearance, you cross the threshold line and you line up. Before you push those throttles forward, you know everything that there is to know about that flight.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Hey, what's up, Ryan? Man, we just had the most amazing conversation with Alex Tapia. This guy is an ex-US Air pilot. He is a money manager. He owns Aviation Retirement Strategies, or ARS. I actually have their pen from a conference that we met at. Alex is just the coolest guy. He started this company that has $1 billion in assets under management now, helping pilots figure out what the heck to do with their giant 401ks, and very, very successful at that.
Yeah, the best part I took away from it was he was like, pilots, the number one thing that pilots... Well, I won't spoil the show, but I'll just say that, you know, we're very destination checklist and training driven. And he actually compliments pilots on that. But also when it comes to investing, maybe not so much.
And yeah, I mean, I've met a few pilots that, you know, get really deep into options trading and stuff, and they've done very well. But the vast majority of us, myself included, you know, you and I are real estate guys, right? We're not stock people. So I need to turn this over to a professional.
Yeah. I think everyone's going to get a lot out of the show. I think this is actually something that you might want to have your spouse actually listen to with you, because it dives into how to really plan. This isn't like another brokerage thing you can buy or some manager you go and you pay, you know, fee for AUM. This is a whole strategy setup. So yeah, with that, let's get right into the show.
Let's get into it. I think everybody's going to love it. Alex, thank you so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to do it, man. Glad to be here.
Absolutely.
So I'll jump right in. And, you know, Alex, you know, I think what you do and your background is just so interesting. What is a, you know, what is a money manager? And let's get right into this. And, you know, I think we were just prior to the show, we were talking about just all the nuances behind it, and just a really good conversation. I'd like to pick up kind of where we left off just prior to recording.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a great question, and there's a lot of confusion as to what a money manager is. And, you know, I make a living managing money. I mean, I get paid on managing portfolios, but really, you know, besides being a money manager, we are officially considered a private wealth management company. It's a little bit different than your average Fidelity or Schwab or, you know, whoever, where Edward Jones, wherever people go, where, you know, they have structured products that they sell, whether it's mutual fund portfolio or things like that. They're not actually managing money. There's somebody else and wherever their buildings are actually managing the money, and they don't really, the person that you're dealing with generally doesn't have much of a say in what goes on in your portfolio. Private wealth management is more customized. It's probably the best way to describe it. You know, people come to us and they want us to help them take this industry and make it so that it works for them rather than they just existing in it. You know, most investors literally just exist in the investment industry because they don't really understand it. They know they have to invest. I mean, most people, every pilot has their 401k, Fidelity, Schwab, or wherever it may be. You know, they know that they have to invest and they have to create a portfolio. And, you know, most guys just do the core funds, whatever they have to offer, either Schwab or Fidelity. And, you know, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But they are not really taking advantage of all the pieces that are out there that, you know, I equate them to pieces of a puzzle to have somebody put them, arrange them in such a way where they're fixed, where they fit together. And then all these pieces, like whatever your benefits are and investments and everything that you have financial, that they're all working together to make your personal financial life work as best as possible. So what we do is, rather than our people just existing in the investment world in a portfolio, we actually take this industry and we manipulate it so that it literally fits them specifically as an individual. Because as an investor, people are literally your financial life. You know, we have a lot in common as pilots. You know, you're with Delta, Hawaiian. I was U.S. Air. I would have been American now, I guess. But, you know, we have a lot in common. We have a lot of same interests, and we probably know a lot of the same people. But once we step out of the cockpit, we're completely unique, and your financial life is literally as unique as a fingerprint. And by the time you start getting into the 500,000-ish and up in account balance, which most pilots have, you know, there's a world out there that most people don't even know that's out there, and that's private money managers or professional financial planners that can literally do anything in the world without selling anything and make this industry work for the individual. And that's the difference between a money manager who is just managing money and a professional financial planner, which is what we are.
Yeah, and I think there's a theme on this show, which we bring up from time to time, and that's called singular focus. You know, when you walk into like a branch, Morgan Stanley or a Chase or, you know, something like that, you might run into somebody who's got a singular focus. They want to sell you a product. They want to sell you something that isn't for your whole life goal. It's just a product off the shelf,
right?
And kind of a one singular focus for whatever that person is trying to sell. And I think, Alex, what I love what your group does is it focuses on the whole picture. And once you start getting that bigger pot of money, you can start putting together pieces of the puzzle, like you were saying, that make this a more comprehensive plan and more in lockstep and in line with what you're trying to set out and accomplish as an individual investor. So that's great.
Yeah.
Ryden, can you give us a little bit of context? Because, you know, you said, you know, there's a big difference between what you're doing and what Edward Jones is doing. You know, can you kind of walk us through and just give us context of how common is what you are doing? How common is that to be able to access that? Because I haven't personally heard of any company that if you're less than a centimillionaire, that those really tailored products are available to you.
Yeah. Well, we're certainly not the only ones. I mean, there's other companies out there. We're just not the norm. Right. It's kind of like, you know, airplanes are pretty normal. Helicopters are not, you know, there's, you know, it's a different world. And this world is really designed, the world that we work in and with my licenses and everything that I have and with my support staff here as well. You know, this world is created for the uber rich, right? Uber rich people have problems that you and I, that any one of us can't even comprehend. I mean, I comprehend it because I deal with them, but you know, most people just can't comprehend the kind of problems that rich people have. And I'm talking multi-millionaires, you know, 50, 60, 80, $90 million clients. You know, one little mistake costs dearly. You know, 1% out of that kind of money, if you, you know, lose 1%, I mean, that's a significant amount. Plus there's taxes and estate planning and succession and all those kinds of things. So so these people need private financial advisors to advise them financially on every move that they make. And that goes beyond lawyers, beyond estate planning lawyers, legal or whatever kind of, you know, it's just part of the team that they have. And so those types of companies hire us to basically be their personal financial advisor. We don't do this very often, but I mean, we've helped people lease cars before, you know, because we have data points that they don't have, and we're separated. We don't have the emotional connection to, you know, to whatever it is that we're doing. So that's what this world has always existed. There's just not that many people out there. What I did when I left the airlines, and the reason why I'm here, is because I was able to take that world. And because pilots and aviation, that's all I know. That's really all I care about. I don't care about the other world. You know, I'm that guy.
Right.
And so what I wanted to do is I want to take this world, and I've created this company, Aviation Retirement Strategies, from the get-go, from day one, literally, to take that world that's generally not even known about or certainly not available to a lot of people. And I've made that world available to aviation professionals, mainly pilots at major carriers.
That's amazing. So we went through your bio in the intro, which is incredible, but can you talk to us about like, how did you get into this? Like why, what was your why and what made you want to follow this path?
Yeah. It's interesting. I was just interviewed by AFGeekery. I don't know if you guys know them.
Yeah.
They just interviewed us and it was unsolicited. It was just kind of cool. And they just did a whole story about me, and ended up being a two article thing because we went into certain advices that I gave, you know, pilot related. But yeah, so we talked about that. So basically, what I did is, you know, I fly jets, man. That's what I wanted to do. I mean, it's an easy job. You know, let's face it. It's the best part-time job in the world.
It's the best.
it's awesome. I mean, you just can't describe it to like a normal person.
Yep.
So that's what I wanted to, you know, it took me a long time to get there. And back in my day, you know, I'm a little bit older, I think, than you guys. Yeah. It was pretty hard to get a pilot's job at a major carrier. I think only 2% of pilots at the time would ever make it to that level. And I'm literally interviewing with astronauts. And I went to University of Houston. I mean, I'm in Houston, but that doesn't make me an astronaut, right? But I'm literally interviewing with these guys. What's that?
I saw that you exited U.S. Airways in 2002.
Yeah.
That was a rough time to be at U.S. Airways, right? I mean, 9/11, bankruptcy twice.
Exactly. So I was, I finally got my job, my dream job. You know, I actually met my wife there. We're married today. You know, we have three kids, and she's a great girl. I mean, it was I hit the jackpot. U.S. Air at the time, we were the highest paid airline pilots in the industry at the time, until I think United surpassed us. But, you know, it was great, and that's really my life was set. You know, I was guaranteed to be a millionaire over there, to retire as a millionaire, and just nothing else I needed to do. And then, unfortunately, 9/11 came along, and obviously, you guys know what's up, what happened there. It just rocked the industry to its core, and you know, so I got furloughed in 2002, and U.S. Air at the time was having a lot of trouble because they closed Reagan, they closed three bases for them. And they couldn't open up. So they went bankrupt three times. So I knew that me going back, even though I had still had a number, seniority number, me going back, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Meanwhile, I have a family and all that kind of stuff. And I decided to take a year off from the day I got furloughed and literally just look for a job, like anything at all, flight instructing, charter, whatever it may be. And because back then there was no jobs available, the only job offer I was able to get, literally the only one, they offered to fly for me to fly left seat in an MD-80 out of Jakarta, Indonesia. And you know, my daughter was just born. You know, I have a wife. My wife's beautiful, blonde girl. You know, she's the whole package. And I'm thinking, we've just been, and I say this back then out of ignorance because we didn't know better then. We just got attacked by a bunch of Muslims. That's the way we were thinking, right?
Right.
And so here we are. I've got a daughter and a wife, and they asked me to go sit in Jakarta, which is Muslim central. It's the biggest Muslim population in the world. And I'm going to go sit there with them for 6 months at a time. You know, back then it just wasn't something I wanted to do. And certainly not expose my wife doesn't, I just don't think that we would have been happy there. So I turned it down. So basically I ran out of money, and, I was doing this on the side, while I was flying for my brother who was in the industry, and I used to basically do data entry for financial plans. So I was kind of familiar with the industry. You know, I was running out of money. I told my wife, I said, hey, listen, we got to do something. I'm going to try this out, because as a pilot, all of us here know that we don't make very good employees. I know if I went to work for somebody, I get fired in a heartbeat. I mean, it's just the way we are. Personality just doesn't match up with the boss.
Yep.
So I had to do something for myself, and I knew that. And so I started this. And, got all my licenses. I parked myself into a library for 3 months, literally got all the licenses that I needed to get started, and launched this company. What I have today, I could have literally back then drawn it out for you on a diagram, you know. So
nice. That's amazing.
Yeah. So here we are. We collectively in the office here, we manage over $1 billion in assets. I'm personally responsible for about 400 million of that. And it's we have almost 1,000 pilot families. We manage entire families, not just individuals. And we're very successful. We're a nationwide company. And so once I knew that it was going to work, I went ahead and resigned my number because they started calling me back. So in 2007, I finally had to just give it up, you know. So that was a long-winded answer to your question.
It's amazing.
Love it.
Yeah. Love the detail.
What makes a pilot financial situation different? Then, because I mean, you have a billion AUM, and for those that are listening, financial assets under management for a firm, that is incredibly impressive.
Thank you.
Very impressive. That is a lot of money to manage, and it is highly successful here. So a huge testament to what you and your team have done and what you've created and built. It sounds like you have a lot of pilot families, and it sounds like you may have some families that you manage capital for that are not pilots.
Yeah.
What would you say makes us pilots financially? Of course, we know what all the weird quirks that pilots have, but
there's a lot of those.
what do you think the top, maybe call it the top three or four things that make us different financially or in the planning state? What would you say is that differentiator?
Yeah. And first of all, and great question. But let me back up. We have as a company, as a group, we have $1 billion under management. Not all of that is mine. It's about 400 million is mine.
Still,
as a group, we work together. We're in the office together here, and I have my compliance people and regulatory people, but they also have their own books and things. So collectively, we're a big company, but personally, I'm responsible for but almost half of that.
Still,
but it's still
what a slouch.
Yeah, just 400 million that you got to tend to. Jeez.
Yeah, I woke up late this morning. Sorry.
Exactly.
So, what makes a pilot's money different? Well, I'll give you the primary reason why I even got out of bed, even thought about doing this, because I know the problems that pilots have from, and I call them problems, meaning they're challenges, not problems. Having money is not a problem. But there are challenges to do it correctly. I guarantee you, you're gonna relate to the story, Ryan and Tate, you as well. When you got hired at Delta, when you get hired at Hawaiian, when I got hired at US Air, you get called up, you go to class, and you sit down. And after about a week or so, you know, they give you the whole, to make you drink the Kool-Aid of the airline, right? They get your ID and all that kind of stuff. And after about a week or so, somebody from HR shows up, usually along with a union rep, whether it's ALPA or whoever, and they tell you how great your benefits are. They're going to go through, you got the 401k, you got the B plan, you got the C plan. Most pilots don't even know how to spell C plan, must know what that is. So, but they give them to you and they say, hey, we're going to contribute 16-17% to your plan, and so you need to invest, create a portfolio. And then we've got a bunch of life insurance for you that you want to sell you and all that kind of stuff. And then they go away, So here we are. We're worried about getting through probation. We're not worried about our 401k at this point, right? So nobody's really paying attention to that kind of stuff. And nor did I, So they don't give you any information to say, here's what you have. But they don't. But nobody at the company, certainly nobody at the union either. They really know how to take all of those pieces that you have, like your insurance, your long-term care, your loss of license, your all the stuff that they give you guys. And you have immense benefits that I couldn't even pay for, even if I wanted to, for my employees. You guys, your stuff is amazing. They just don't teach you how to use it.
Right. It's not applicable.
Because they may know this is a 401k, but and how does it fit in the whole big scheme of the financial industry? And how can you manipulate it so that it works for you in the best way possible? So you guys, basically the 787 of benefit plans, that's what pilots have. And that's one thing that makes them different from, other people, is that they have so many great benefits. And they also have the money. And whether they like it or not, the money's going to throw money at you,
Right.
So that's something that unique that not really everybody has. Pilots tend to forget how good they have it. Again, it's the best part-time job in the world, right? So... So that's one thing that makes them different, but there's no anyone particular that knows how to put all that stuff together. And that's probably one of the big differentiating things, that pilots are very, very smart people, highly intelligent, very capable, motor skills and all the other skills that you need to have to be to be a professional in the aviation industry. But they're not being taught the proper way to handle the kinds of money that you guys have. Most pilots around 45, 50, you're going to have $1 million in a 401k. Imagine by the time they're 65 these days, assume they don't even change the age. So they have a lot of money. And so the fact that they have so many benefits and they don't really figure out how to use them properly, unless they run into somebody like myself, You know, that's something that makes them a little bit unique. And also their personality. You ask for about two or three or four different ways. Personality is a big thing with pilots. You know, we have triple A type personalities, and that's totally fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll be the first one to admit it, that I am quadruple A, man. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be in charge, right? Just like yep. you, when something happens, you're going to take that airplane over. You're going to be in charge of that plane, and no one's going to question you. You know, it's yep. just, it's your show. Anyway, that kind of personality, I think, also makes pilots sometimes not good investors because we're afraid to ask for help. You know, it's almost like you don't want to tell people what you don't know, even though you know that you don't know it.
Right.
You know, am I right? I mean, how yep. many pilots do you know that are like that, right?
100%.
I think that's what, one thing that makes them different. And I think when they sit down with somebody like myself, or not somebody, when they sit down with me, you know, I understand. I fully understand where they're coming from. There's not one bit of intimidation that I have when I talk to a pilot. I fully understand their motivations, their goals, where they've been, where they're going. I know everything about them other than what they do personally, you know, with their spouse. And I also know what drives them. And, you know, so having somebody like myself for them to talk to is paramount, especially when you have that kind of money, so that you don't make rash decisions or decisions that are based on only partial information versus the whole big thing, you know? And for me, it's always been a way to, when you have a pilot's portfolio is like a 787. It's an extremely efficient machine. It can go, 17, 18 hours, you know, whatever it can fly. Don't really know, but, you know, it can go nice and high up. The pressurization system is fantastic. It keeps you at a low altitude in the cabin. It's a phenomenal airplane. If you compare that to Beechcraft 1900, right? Mm-hmm. So the Beech 1900 was what most people are flying. Pilots are flying 787s when it comes to, you know, relating it to portfolios. You have everything that you possibly need, and you have the means and the tools to fund these vehicles with. But because pilots don't set them up correctly most of the time, it's like they're flying a 787, but they never put the gear in the flaps up. You know, it's got a lot of drag on it. It's turbulent. It's hard to get to where you need to go and hard to take advantage of everything that airplane can do. What people like me do when it comes to these types of personalities, and I think why we've been so effective, I just help these people put the gear in the flaps up. It's flip a switch, you know, that's it. And so that takes care of that personality, which makes them a little bit different, to have somebody like myself just do that for them without them having to worry about it. It's like, you know, I can't tell them that I don't know this, because we're part of the same world. I think we're almost like family. You know, we have a lot in common, and we do a lot of things the same way. So I think that relation thing is important, especially for the personalities like that. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. So in terms of asking the questions that you know, pilots, you know, we don't want to ask what we don't know, because we don't want to admit that we don't know it. I want to go deep on that. Let's start from the top, even though this isn't going to be a super applicable question. I think it's important to give context. What is, I mean, you were saying that Delta's got what, Brokerage Link, Hawaiian mm-hmm. has Empower. What yeah. are these companies? What do they do? And how do they get paid? How does an airline even end up with a service provider like that?
Yeah. So if you fly for a major, Delta, you have Fidelity, and you have what's called the brokerage link. It's a brokerage account which you can buy your own stuff and create your own portfolio inside of a retail brokerage account that they give you inside of the 401k.
Right. And Hawaiian has the PCRA with Schwab. So it's a self-directed brokerage option under the big corporate umbrella that manages the whole 401k program for the entire pilot group.
Exactly. So through Empower, they hire Schwab, and you have the Schwab plan, and then you have the PCRA. And at major airlines anyway, that's pretty much where things either have Schwab or Fidelity. They're just the biggest providers, mm-hmm. you know, because they're such huge plans, and they have billions of dollars under these plans. So what a 401k is basically just a vehicle to save money into. And you know, the company takes it out of your paycheck. It's easy to contribute to. You get a tax break because it comes off of your gross income lower, so that you don't get taxed as much, which for pilots is extremely helpful, because you're such a high tax bracket. You know, when you save 30% on $10,000, that's $3,000, you know? So, mm-hmm. anyway, so a 401k is, it's a great plan to have, but a 401k can't exist on its own. It has to have what's called a TPA or third party administrator. And a third party administrator basically manages the plan. It keeps, you know, does fills out the forms of the IRS, make sure that everything is compliant. There's something called top heavy testing. I don't know. I'm not sure if you know what that is, but to make sure that everybody, you know, contributes as many people contribute to the plan. So a third party administrator does that. And Empower for Hawaiian is that. Empower is basically the third party administrator, and they happen to have their portfolios or your portfolio access through Schwab. Empower also does Fidelity. It just so happens at Delta that just Fidelity does it. They're a third party administrator. And they also provide all the other kinds of benefits and things like that. But basically Empower or Fidelity or Schwab by itself, because like for instance, United has Schwab, they don't have Empower. Southwest has Empower and Schwab. You know, so it's just whatever the company chooses to basically take all of the benefits and basically package them so that they're in one place. You know, because Schwab doesn't do long-term care insurance.
Thanks. I think even though, you know, I can't, you know, none of us can do anything with that data. I think it helps to just understand, you know, top down 35,000 foot view. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So the probably the most effective, I would say most effective and the most dangerous thing that they've ever given pilots is access to a brokerage account where they can just day trade their accounts away. You know, brokerage accounts in our industry, we consider them like bars of soap. The more you use them, the smaller they get. And it, I mean, that's if great. You think about it, the more you use it, you know, the more money you're going to lose because you're, you know, you guys have fun with people that day trade.
I'm guilty of it.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I'm a real estate guy. I'm not a stock guy. So I've gotten myself in trouble. That's for sure.
So day trading doesn't work. It's basically gambling, and at the end of the day, you will lose money doing that if you do it long enough. But you know, but it does give you, you know, 401ks are originally were designed where any layman person can literally throw a dart at whatever investment option they offer you, and long term, you should be theoretically and statistically okay. Right. So it's designed for it not to be a day trading account. And then when the PCRAs came along or the brokerage links came along, all these brokerage accounts, which pretty much every decent sized 401k will have now.
And PCRA, just quickly, is personal choice
retirement account. Yeah.
Okay. That's the self-directed account.
Yeah.
Where you can move money from the main core, where they offer just some target date funds, over into a brokerage account, just as if it was one of your personal accounts, and you can trade any stock or mutual fund or ETF that's publicly listed, correct?
That's exactly right. And the benefit of that inside your 401k is you don't have to worry about capital gains taxes or long-term capital gains, short-term capital gains. It's all tax deferred. So it doesn't, you don't have to worry about that kind of stuff, which is great.
Yeah, and you said something that I want to jump in and clarify, because I know that someone's going to listen to this and go, I heard the word self-directed. I have one of those. I have a self-directed account. Mm-hmm. Super big distinction. Self-directed, you can buy stocks, bonds, mutual funds, but self-directed is a marketing term for being able to pick and choose what you want to do. But you also might hear us talk about in another episode, self-directed IRAs or self-directed 401ks, completely different meaning on self-directed. Self-directed may or may not mean that you can buy non-traditional assets like real estate. So Alex is in just north of Houston, and there's a big self-directed IRA company or self-directed company that will set up self-directed IRAs called Quest Trust Company. And they will set up truly self-directed IRAs that allow you to invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate, traditional, non-traditional assets. So I didn't want to just kind of glaze over that term, but inside of your 401k, like you were saying, brokerage link allows you to self-direct or pick traditional assets to invest in, but not non-traditional like real estate. So I just wanted to make that distinction.
Excellent. Right, exactly. And you're absolutely right. There's a difference. And they are called both. They were both called self-directed. The technical term for that is inside of the brokerage, the self-directed brokerage accounts at these plans, you are not allowed to buy these alternative investments that are not necessarily registered or things like that. So you have to do different things to be able to buy real estate inside of a 401k and or with your IRA rather. So you're absolutely correct. There's a distinction. So when I'm talking about self-directed brokerage, I'm just talking about brokerage accounts where you can buy and sell, you know, stocks, mutual funds, bonds, ETFs, whatever you want. So, you know, they are basically what they are, they're retail accounts. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when you buy retail, you're paying for a lot of things. I have three kids and I have a daughter in college at A&M and I have two identical twin boys. They're 17. And man, when they go buy shoes, I'm spending $200 at Nike, you know, in the mall, right? Mm-hmm. Well, not the mall, Amazon still, but whatever. who goes to the mall now? But, you know, so anything that you buy inside of the brokerage account, unless you're dealing strictly with individual stocks or exchange traded funds that have very low fees, most people buy mutual funds. And when you go buy mutual funds, you're literally going to the mall and buying the $200 Nike shoe. You know, where what a lot of people don't realize that there are ways to basically be in the wholesale world, which we call the institutional world as versus retail. And, you know, when we manage people's money, we elevate them up to an institutional level whenever we can so that we don't deal with all the expenses and all those things. So a lot of people, when they're day trading inside of their brokerage account, I'm assuming that they're doing mutual funds. And every time that they do that, there's a commission and the commission is extremely well hidden. That is very, in fact, I actually have a binder here. We actually broke down the fees of Schwab and Fidelity. And it took me and my staff an entire day to find out what these things actually are.
It's amazing that's legal.
It's not that it's not disclosed. You just don't know where to find it in the prospectus that they, you know, it's there. But good luck with you. Who's going to read through that? Who does?
Yeah, the 400-page disclosures that they send you once a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, so nobody really knows that part of it or certainly don't understand it. So every time they make a trade, they're losing commissions. And we're talking about 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%. You know, of a purchase. You know, you buy $100,000 worth of stuff, you're going to spend $5,000 just in commissions.
Wow. Which is why Edward Jones wants to sell you mutual funds, right?
It's the only reason why. And every single, I mean, I can tell you the different kinds of shares of mutual funds, how the commissions work. It's not really that complicated. Just nobody ever talks about it because everybody's on commission or most people are commissioned in this industry. So they don't want you to know. Where people like us, we just, you know, we don't make commissions. We just manage money for it. We're professional money managers. So you'll never hear that conversation, and which is pretty interesting. So most people just don't know. I think in the last 20 years, when I've explained how that system works, different shares of mutual funds, there's literally been two pilots to this date that have actually known what I'm talking about. And I've talked to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
And you're talking about the two different share classes of institutional versus individual?
Yeah. So because you're not an institutional investor, you're not licensed like I am. You go, let's say you got, I don't know, let's take the Fidelity Magellan Fund, one of the largest funds in the world. It used to be pretty popular amongst flight crews. Let's say you call up Ryan, let's say you call up Fidelity and you got your PC, your brokerage link account, which is the equivalent to the personal charge retirement account of Schwab. And you say, hey, I want to buy a Fidelity Magellan fund. I want to buy whatever, you know, $30,000 worth of shares of whatever that fund is. They don't really ask you this, but what they should be asking you is what share class would you like to buy? And that's if they were to ever do that, which they usually don't. That's where people get confused. They have no idea what the hell a share of a mutual. They just want to buy the mutual fund. They didn't realize it was, you know. So basically what they're asking, how do you want to pay all your fees and all your commissions to me for placing this trade for you? So if you buy an A share, it's an upfront load. You've heard of loads. A lot of people talk about loads. This is where the loads are. So an A share has an upfront load. And you know, when you buy whatever, say $100,000 worth of something, that load can be anywhere between 3% to 7%. So you're going to pay everything up front. They're going to issue you less shares to make up for those. So your money is going to get invested, but you're just going to get less shares to make up for the commissions that they need to pay. And one of the reasons why you might want there's never a reason why you would want to do that, although everybody has A shares, is that when you buy an A share, because you pay your fees up front, your ongoing costs, the internal fund for the fund fees that are always built in, are a little bit lower than the rest of the shares because they've already gotten most of the money from you that they wanted. And the other part is that it's fully liquid, because if you buy it today, pay the commission, sell it tomorrow, they don't care. They couldn't care less because they've already been paid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so most people will have A shares because the broker gets paid that commission. Now, if you're smart and you want to do something different, you don't pay the commission up front, you can buy a B share, which is a load at the end. So when you buy the share, you kind of you're locked into the mutual fund for a period of somewhere 5 to 7 years where your fees are much higher. So you're paying that cost over time. And if you were to leave before that period is over, they're going to charge you the commission anyway. So it's more of a long-term thing. So, you know, so, but either way, you're paying a lot of fees. And this is these are the flaps in the gear that you're never putting up, right? These fees are really dragging down your portfolio. And if you have a long-term horizon, you know, you can take 7 years to be in this fund if you are. Then after that period, then it automatically turns into an A share, which is now lower fees and full liquidity. If you don't want to do any of that, the last option that you have is a C share, which is what we call a level load, where the ongoing yearly fees are so much higher, you're basically buying yourself liquidity by paying, you know, maybe double the amount in fees ongoing as you own it, so that if you want to leave, you don't have to pay like a big upfront commission or a back-end commission. Those are the only three options that you guys have as retail investors. It's a very ineffective and very portfolio ineffective thing to do, because any performance is going to get dragged down by fees. You know, if all things are equal and you have an exchange traded fund portfolio that has very little fees, the ETF is going to do better because it doesn't have the drag associated with it. It's going to get there without running out of gas, you know? So
interesting.
There's a lot of things that these PCRAs, they're great, but you have to know how to maneuver inside of this industry to do it properly. Guys like me come in and we help them do that because we operate at an institutional level. We don't worry about any of that commission stuff. Like we buy totally different kinds of shares. We operate in a completely different world. We don't worry about, you know, commissions, fees, you know, everything is for us. It's basically almost non-existent.
So I think that's a huge misconception, because most people think, well, why would I use a money manager? Because I'm going to pay them 1% when I can just do it myself and I'm not going to pay that fee. And what they don't realize is that
it's much cheaper.
It's cheaper.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really interesting.
So everyone walking around is with a 401k, on average, they'll pay between 1.5% to 2% in fees on a yearly basis. So you got $1 million, you're paying 20 grand. That's a lot of money. Yep. At my firm here, we charge a flat 1.3% if it's through our own brokers here, or if it's a Schwab or Fidelity, we just charge a flat 1%. It's literally almost half the cost to have a professional money manager, and you know, that can actually help you out and make your portfolio efficient and take advantage of this industry instead of it constantly taking advantage of you.
I love that. What would you say? This brings me to one of the main questions that I wanted to ask on this episode, which is why use a money manager instead of just buying the S&P? Because every time we look at any sort of financial article that looks at hedge funds versus the S&P, or it's very, very, very rare that you see that someone by actively trading can be just throwing money in the S&P 500 and forgetting about it for 30 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when it comes to, you know, people doing things on their own, it's not that it's not possible. You know, a money manager, I have no idea if I'm going to beat any index next year, tomorrow, you know, we did last year, which is great, you know, but it's never a guarantee. But it's all the other things that are that we provide. Like, for instance,
real quick, let me stop you, because I do want to discern between, you know, a money manager at, say, Edward Jones down the street and what you do, because it sounds, you know, what ARS does is much, much more involved and more unique than that. So maybe first talk about the difference between the S&P and just going down to Edward Jones. I mean, what's the difference between that? And then maybe, you know, differentiating ARS versus the Edward Jones and the original S&P investment.
Yeah. Well, it all boils down to, again, retail versus wholesale, or right, what we call retail versus institutional.
Right.
You walk into Edward Jones and you're going to talk to some guy, girl, whatever. And no matter what your needs, goals, whatever it is that you have, you're going to end up in exactly the same portfolio as the guy they just talked to before you.
Right.
Literally.
Single.
Now they're going to make it as it's all customized. They're going to give you an 80-page report of a bunch of BS that means absolutely nothing, because it's all based on computer simulations. And that's so it assumes that a human being is a computer, and they're not. You know, life is just too random for computers to work like that. You know, so you're going to end up in the same exact cookie cutter portfolio. If you come to me, Tate, and you give me and you say, "Hey, I'm with Edward Jones," before you walk in the door, I can tell you exactly what you own.
Right.
They're all the same, and they're all A shares.
Right.
You know. So they're not really a financial advisor. They're not really a money manager, because they're selling prepackaged portfolios that the big Edward Jones has created. So, hey, you need to sell this today. And depending on the relationships that they have with the mutual funds, whoever's paying them the most are going to get at the top of the list. And that's what you're going to end up with your portfolio. This is an extremely lucrative industry. And, you know, but that's just how it works. You go to Schwab, it's going to be the same thing. You go to Fidelity. Fidelity is actually one of the most expensive to do that. And they're the most salesy out of them all. You guys are young, but when you start getting to retirement, you're going to start getting a lot of calls from Fidelity and Schwab, because they want your money and they want you to put you in that mutual fund portfolio, because they make billions off of that. There's nothing wrong with that.
If you're a new pilot, first of all, I should say, who is your most ideal candidate? Are we talking about a regional guy that just got upgraded, or are you, you know, what's your sweet spot for a client? Or like, who can you help the most or be most impactful to?
Yeah, well, there's three categories of pilots. There's the regional guys we generally don't work that much with, because they just don't have that much money. They're trying to get on with the majors, right? And there's very few that actually have a decent amount of money, but they're also younger. They're not, you know, they're just in a different category. So there's that category of pilot that's young, first starting out, they don't have much. They're still trying to figure out their way, you know, in this industry and certainly financially as well, because they've never made this kind of money. So although we're getting more and more of those, and by the way, let me preface also, about 5 years now, I'm the official advisor on the planet, every major airline, Fidelity, Schwab. I mean, we can go in and we manage money. Our name shows up on your screen through Schwab or Fidelity. And the reason I say that is because before we did that, we were not allowed to manage money inside somebody's 401k plan. We certainly can't log in for you and do whatever. You know, it has to be done through the proper channel, through what we call a limited power of attorney. But, you know, so once we got that ability, all the younger people all of a sudden became available to us, because now we can actually manage their money while they're working. And there's a whole process that we go through that. So there's that category of pilots. And then there's the category of pilots that are, the kids are, maybe you know, their college funds are already funded, and you know they're like in that second phase of life where things are starting to become a little bit easier and more predictable, and they're starting to look, hey, retirement's coming up pretty soon, and as we all know, since we're always looking 2 months ahead, life goes very fast for us, so retirement comes up a lot quicker than people think. You know, they're starting to think about it. It's like, hey, I got 10, 15 years to go. And I'm starting to have a little money now. Like, what do I do with this stuff? And how do I start taking care of my retirement? So that group of guys generally starts between 45 to 55. And, you know, and these are guys now, hey, I have something, I want to take care of it. Now I have something to lose. Where the younger guys, you got 10 grand in your 401k. Who cares, man? You know,
right.
I mean, not that you don't care, but
yeah, yeah.
When you have $1 million, now you start to go, oh, wait a minute, I should take care of this. And then you have the third category, which is the guys that are very close to retirement. And those are the guys that need the most help, because you have to prepare them for retirement. And that's, and during that phase, that's primarily where we work with the second category and the third category, because that takes the most work to start preparing somebody for retirement. But especially when you're in retirement, that's when we do a lot of work, a lot of planning work, and we create strategies. And that's the reason my company is called Aviation Retirement Strategies. We strategize as to how to monetize your portfolio for you specifically. In other words, how do you recreate an income from a portfolio without buying ridiculous expensive annuities and things like that? And there's ways to do that. You just need a professional planner to help you out. So we primarily work in the, although I started to kind of catch up, we primarily work in the retirement guys, but the second group is definitely up and coming because there's so many pilots signing up with us. You know, that's becoming a pretty large portion of our of our book that we manage.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. What would you say in that second group is the most common thing, piece of advice that you would have repeatedly in your initial consultation or initial meeting with that pilot? What's the most glaring problematic thing that everybody's doing or not doing? Outside of what we talked about, maybe that, you know, when we talked about the brokerage link and playing the lottery every day with that, but
hopefully win the lottery, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, great question. So the conversations are really pretty different, and I'll give you the conversation with the second and third category. The conversation with the second category is most pilots literally, and I can't even think of one that has not been like this. They're just existing, right? They're just investing. They have a portfolio, and they're trying to grow the portfolio, but they don't really know why exactly they're growing their portfolio. In other words, their dollars don't have a specific purpose. They're just investing, right? It's kind of like you ride your bike and you're just not really going anywhere. You're just riding in circles. You're just investing. Hopefully your circle gets bigger, but you know, you're just investing. So what we do, the conversation that we have with those guys is, you know, what is it that you really want to do? It gets very personal, and it's actually kind of cool. It's a very personal thing. It's a very personal journey for each family. And I never, if you're married, like I'll never talk to anybody without their spouse present. It's a family journey that they go on. Mm-hmm. And what is it that they're trying to accomplish? And whatever that is, what are they doing today to get there? And is that the best way to get there? And so whether they're getting there in the right way or not, we help them make their investments very purposeful. And we give them the reason to invest and the reason why money's going there. Sometimes we'll split up their portfolios to do different things with it. But, you know, collectively, all the portfolios will be working together. But now every portfolio has an actual purpose of accomplishing something in the future. And once people get to that point, they're like, wow, this is actually, okay, now I know where we're going. It's kind of like they just get relief. Okay, now I've got to, you know, I'm starting to get this thing. And so it's pretty cool for that age group. The retiring guys, it's kind of the same conversation, but then we get into something that's pretty complicated because they're entering what we call a distribution mode, or, you know, they're starting to live off of their portfolio. And most of us don't have enough money to just stick under our pillow and call it a day. You know, you will run out of money if you do that because of inflation and all these different things. But you have to continue growing the money. The problem is that when they start systematically withdrawing money, it makes it extremely challenging. That's probably the most difficult part of what we do, is to create a distribution strategy while still growing the portfolio. You know, because the IRS is after you. You never know what the market's going to do. The market will crash in the future. You know, you have to be prepared for that. And what usually what I tell these guys, and by the way, aviation is a great analogy to the financial industry. So you guys are, you know, you're starting to think about retirement, right? Because you are at that point. I haven't even seen your portfolio, but I guarantee I know. You're starting at that point, hey, I've got something to lose. Mm-hmm. It's starting to grab my attention. You know, you need to do something with it. You're probably just wondering what. The way I equate it is, imagine you're in the stage of your career today, you're taxiing along the airport, right? The ultimate goal is to get to some runway. You can't just taxi around, right? And getting to that runway, that's getting close to retirement. And by the time you get to that runway, so as you're taxiing along, you're building up whatever you're building. And, you know, by the time you get to the runway, before you get the takeoff clearance, you cross the threshold line and you line up, before you push those throttles forward, you know everything that there is to know about that flight. Like literally, you know exactly what you're going to do if something goes wrong. God forbid an engine cuts out at V1. You know, by the time you take off, you know what waypoint you're going to go to first. You're going to know your departure. You're going to do all that stuff. When you get to the altitude, you know, you're going to know that you roughly know what the winds are going to be, where the turbulence, you know, all the stuff about your destination. And you certainly know where you're going. That's the most important part. So when it comes to financial planning in the proper way, after you're done taxiing and, you know, and you push those throttles forward after you line up, that will be considered retirement. And so in our world, by the time you push those throttles forward, you better know all the bad things that can happen to your life and account for it ahead of time before you create an investment portfolio. So in other words, have that frame of mind of always, the market's going to crash tomorrow. How do I survive that? And if it doesn't crash tomorrow, it's going to crash the next day, the next day, the next day. So you're always kind of paranoid about it, but you know, it's the only way to really move forward, because if you don't plan for these things ahead of time, something will come and hit you in the ass at some point, you know, because life just happens, you know, look, just stuff happens. Like look at last year, you know, bad, horrible year for the stock market. We didn't know that that was coming. You know, we didn't know that 9/11 was coming. We didn't know 2008 was coming. God forbid you enter the Great Depression, you know? So you create all these contingency plans before you push those throttles forward. So by the time you actually start rolling, you know everything that can go wrong with your portfolio, more importantly, how to deal with it, and you have money set aside. So every single dollar that you have has a specific purpose in not only growing your money, distributing your money, but also in case something happens, what do you do? Where do you take your money from? There's a whole process to it. It's pretty complicated.
I'll just play on your analogy a little bit. You know, you started with not knowing your why. Like your pilots come in and they don't know their why. They don't know where they're going.
Yeah.
That's kind of like not knowing your destination. And, you know, picking your destination is kind of the most fun thing to think about if you think about it, right? If you're getting in your car and driving somewhere, you know, the fun part isn't thinking about how much fuel and gas and where we're going and how much oil and tire pressure and all that. The fun part is like, we're going somewhere fun. Like we're going to Hawaii, right? We're going to go hang out with Tate in Hawaii. And so I feel like that's like the best part is like you guys, pilots should be thinking about where they want to end up. And then, you know, then I'll one more tug on your analogy, which is, you know, it's like trying to do that flight without a check pilot or a check airman or going to sim training or, you know, having your manuals updated, whatever it might be, right? That's kind of like trying to do this by yourself. It just seems really intuitive for us to want to get that kind of training and that kind of help and guidance. That's why we wanted to bring guests like yourself onto the show. Is that so we can start sharing this out, that this knowledge and this help exists, and you should be considering, you know, these types of things to make a full strategy. We're just about out of time, but I wanted to wrap up because Tate and I selfishly, you know, we play in the alternative investment space, and we wanted your just honest opinion. You know, we don't try to position this podcast in any other way. We like to hear it. Your direct. This is how you feel about it. But you know, alternative investments, i.e. things like non-traditional assets, unregistered securities, real estate, syndications, funds, things like that. What's your opinion on that?
You know, it's when you have a toolbox as large as you guys have, right? You have the luxury to be able to do those kinds of things. And if anything, what they do, we call these alternatives. If anything to do, what they do is they provide a little bit of diversification. There's never wrong with having guaranteed income. You know, because when you have guaranteed income, just like bonds and anything that spits out something, some interest or whatever, or yield, it stabilizes the volatility of a portfolio, you know, and ideally you want to be in as least turbulence as possible. So things like that are phenomenal for the stabilization of a portfolio's volatility. So, you know, there's all kinds of different alternatives in real estate. You guys do storage, I believe, right? You know, there's real estate, there's REITs. I mean, there's all kinds of different things. There's a million. But, you know, they have a great place in the portfolio. As you well know, it's probably not for an entire portfolio, but maybe 10, 20% of it. You know, it's a great hedge against inflation, first of all. It's a hedge against volatility. And you know, it's also a way to have a guaranteed source of income. And if the company does it correctly, it could be a pretty significant amount of income, you know? So they're great vehicles in that they have a place. If your portfolio is large enough, they have a place in everybody's portfolio. And I think pilots are definitely at that level. I think when you start having 500,000-ish, you know, those things start becoming a pretty viable thing. You know, there's liquidity issues, you know, so you don't want to put all your money. You have to be able to account for contingencies, like you need a new car, you know, health issues or whatever. But yeah, no, they're great vehicles. And we use vehicles all the time like that, that we consider alternatives, whether they're business development companies or we call them BDCs or REITs or things like that. I mean, every professional manager will have that tool somewhere in their lineup.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, I think for me, you know, I've been a real estate guy my entire life. I've been a real estate investor personally for over a decade, 12, 13 years now. I have a fund where we go after private equity real estate. But I feel like, you know, for a typical airline captain now, you know, they have just this incredible stream of income. And they can't even fit much money into their 401k. I mean, at 16, 17% now, which is what
you're maxing out. Yeah.
401k, the company's maxing it out. Yeah. I mean, I only have what, $13,000 that I can put in there. It's peanuts. So I've got all this income that I can go generate massive amounts of cash flow and returns outside of my 401k. But in addition to that, I have this huge 401k account that, to be completely honest, is really underperforming. And it's like, I don't know what to do with it. So I can buy the S&P or I'm going to come talk to Alex. Yeah. In fact, I still have your pen from TPNX. This is one of my favorites. Yeah, man. These things are great.
I need a pen.
We need to get Ryan one of these.
We need to get Ryan a pen. Yeah. I was going to say if we had the time, I was going to ask you if we could live sign me up for some of your services, but anyway, we can do that offline.
You know, I think I've always thought about it. I think it would be a pretty cool idea. I'd have to run it through compliance, and I think it would be okay. But to go through the process of onboarding a client the way we do it, it's very different. We don't sell things. You know, it's a very cool conversation, and people usually leave pretty energized by the time they leave here because they didn't realize all the things that you can actually do. You know, the investment world is pretty cool if you know how to move around it.
Well, that 401k is super, super powerful. And it's, you know, it's only just a piece of the wealth building pie that we have as pilots, but it's a big piece. So use it. On that note, you know, how do I get in touch with you and how does everybody else get in touch with you if they want to sign on?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty simple. We have, my email is tapia@pilotmoney.com. Our website's pilotmoney.com. It's pretty easy to remember. And, you know, we do everything, either via Zoom or in person. And, we just have a conversation, you know, and, just give us a call. Our phone number here is 281-272-2229. You can email me, call me directly. I have an entire staff. I don't have salespeople. I literally have my staff supports me 100%. Everybody's here to, you know, deliver what I promised to the pilots. We just have a conversation. And if you say, hey, let's move forward, it's the paperwork is actually pretty simple. There's not much to it. It's more about what it is that you need and setting it up correctly. That's what takes up the bulk of the time. Later on, we talk about the investments and whatever it is, that, whether you want to customize portfolios for yourself or whatever. There's a million things that you can do, but give me a call. Shoot me an email or something like that. And, you know, happy to, you know, sit down and talk to whoever meets. I mean, if you're a pilot, you're welcome here. The door's wide open.
Perfect. Alex. I love it. And tell them where you heard about him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the process is easy and you know, there's probably a couple of things I want to talk to you guys about anyway. I want to learn more about your product. I think you guys are doing a good job. And by the way, I'll give you kudos. You guys seem extremely professional. You know, very impressed with that. And you know, and when you do this kind of stuff, you can't half-ass it. And you guys are certainly not. I think it's great. You guys, I like that a lot. You guys are that's impressive.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So,
well, Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for coming on the show. We're just about out of time, but really appreciate the wisdom that you dropped, and I think the listeners are going to get an absolute ton out of this. So thank you for coming on. Yeah,
we also have a podcast channel. It's called the Pilot Money Podcast. It's on YouTube. We are slowly adding things as we, as we develop them. You know, just good advice for pilots. It's all aviation related, and we'd love to have you guys on at some point as well.
Yeah, we'll share that. That'd be great. We'll share that in the show notes. Definitely. So Tate and I will address that in the show notes so all the listeners can like and subscribe.
Sounds great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys and talking to you guys later. But hey, I really appreciate your time. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Thanks, Alex. Take care.
You guys have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you guys.